From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 6th day of May, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. And Mike Tenor will join us from T-Storm Weather in Chicago to discuss the forecast for Brazil. He says, you know, it's just dry and there's not much else to say. And then here in the United States, we'll take up the weekend weather as it relates to the Dakotas, Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa in particular, and on into Illinois, Ohio, and Indiana as well. Could be a pretty good rainfall in some of those areas. And along the way today, Gary Schnuke will be here to review what purchases were made back in March as it relates to crop insurance by farmers for corn coverage. And how many of them took ECO? We'll cover all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today settled 7.59 and a half. That was up 6 and a quarter. July 10 and a quarter higher at 7.18 and three quarters. December up 20 and three quarters. The settlement price there at 6.25 and a half. The May beans up 23 and a half cents at 16.05 and a half. November at 14.09, 26 and a quarter higher. The bean meal up 3.40. The bean oil down 49 cents. July wheat up 8 and three quarters for the soft bread at 7.53, and the hard red July at 7.26 and three quarters, up 9 and three quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures finished a buck higher for the day. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago today. Kind of a weird day, I suppose, in Chicago. Corn futures, December contract really beginning to pick up steam. I suppose it's looking at the dry weather in Iowa and to the west. Are there other things that are happening?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Of course, this lingering issue we've got with the safrinha crop is going to play into that because, typically whenever we get out to harvest, that's when the safrinha crop is getting exported and through our harvest. And they may not be able to export near as much corn as what they were hoping to this year because they can't catch a rain to save their life. And so it's awfully dry down there. It's awfully dry in the western corn belt. Couple of these systems that's come through here have sure been disappointing, and then some of the systems forecasted here over the next 2 weeks, same type of thing. It looks to me like the Western Corn Belt, is going to struggle here early on. Now, dry May is actually a pretty good thing most of the time. So if they can get some follow-up moisture, I think they'll be okay. But the problem is their emergence, and the evenness, it just has not been very good because they've had a cool, dry condition, and that's just not what you want whenever you're planting corn.
Was there very much volume in the trade today from Chicago?
I'd say there's plenty of volume. You look at, for instance, December corn, and you had 180,000 contracts almost is what I was showing. And, definitely a lot of play there. I think whenever you look at new crop corn after yesterday, you floundered around and you were up 12 to 13 a bunch of the day. And then all of a sudden you look up and you're up 20 on the day. And you don't really think you're going to post two 20-cent days in a row, especially in the month of May, whenever the crop is actually going in the ground fairly quickly. Now, this week, of course, the pace won't be near as good as what it was last week. But, we've pretty much caught up to average. So enough corn's in the ground that I think the trade on a normal year would feel pretty good about things. But obviously, we all know that we're looking at a tighter situation than what we have for a while. The one thing I'd caution people on is that if they don't think that, $6 and $7 corn at some point in here and $7.20 on the July where we close today, if they don't think that we're going to have some demand destruction, I think they're sorely mistaken. So person has to be cautious as to make too many assumptions there. But yeah, right now it looks like this is a freight train that doesn't want to slow down.
How are exports holding up?
Exports weren't much to brag about today, and you've got to ask yourself, if that's something that you're going to experience, moving forward, if you're still going to have an issue with exports. But, they weren't anything too exciting. I mean, whenever you look at them compared to recent weeks, actually we were off, as far as corn's concerned. So, we were down significantly from not only last week, but the The 4 week average at 137 million tons. We did have a few new crop sales for corn, just over 100 million tons, but soybeans actually had a little bit more than what we saw with corn. And so that tells you how poor corn exports were here this morning. But, 165,000 on soybeans for old crop, million metric ton. And then as far as new crops concerned, another 192. So a pretty good day, really pretty good week for soybean exports.
Did I see the Chinese canceled some export or some imports from the United States?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday we saw some exports that got canceled, and then we also saw the unknown picked up a little bit more than what those cancellations were. So, you've got to ask yourself, are we going to see the Chinese continue to kind of maybe roll a little bit to new crop? What are they going to do? But my personal opinion is we're not going to play too many funny games here, because most of the corn that they've got purchased for this marketing year was bought at a significantly cheaper price than what we're looking at today. So a person has to understand that that's not the environment you typically see cancellations in. So I don't expect that would be the case this year either.
Yeah, so you're expecting to close the gap between the purchases and the shipments and to make the USDA number?
Shipments were huge this week, over 2 million tons, actually 2.1 million metric tons. As soybean shipments continue to dwindle, we're seeing ports are still running about as hard as they can run because we've switched over to corn. And so do I expect to ship all the corn that USDA thinks that we will? I think there's a pretty decent chance that we're going to see that happen. And yes, this week was a frustrating week, I guess, for export sales, but we've got so many sales on the books already that we feel pretty confident that we're going to end up reaching that goal.
Exports seem to be holding in so far, though there is some concern. I assume that ethanol demand is still good. You can talk a little bit about that. That leaves the livestock sector, which is the largest consumer of corn and other oil seeds.
Yeah, I mean, for ethanol yesterday, actually, we were a little over 96 million bushels we boiled through. I mean, it's the first week in quite a while that we saw your ethanol stocks down or up just a little bit on the week, but they were still down versus last year by around 20%. So, ethanol is grinding right along. You've got good margins yet. And so you feel pretty good there. But I am concerned about this livestock sector. It's amazing to see these prices doing what they're doing. And whenever you look over at feeder cattle, people buying feeders right now, at 130, 140, 150, depending on if you get lucky enough to be fairly close to the board. I know you usually run over that, but if you're buying there and then you're looking at feed costs where they're at, and then you look out to fats out to fourth quarter or to next year's first quarter, 127 to 130 on fats, I just don't know that there's a whole lot of black ink to be had there. I am friendly cattle later on, because I'm afraid you're going to push a few of these cattle guys out of the business sometime in the next 3 or 4 months. It concerns me if these prices continue higher, that's what you're going to see happen. And so later on, I do think you'll see some major strength in the cattle market.
Crops are coming up out of the ground. They look pretty good here. How about in your area? That's just an hour south of us.
Yeah, Todd, last time I saw this nice and uniform emergence was in 2012. We all had a phenomenal spring in 12. This is a different spring than 12, though. Yes, we're dry like we were then as far as it going in the ground, but we were a lot warmer in 12 than what we've seen so far this year. So, I guess my personal opinion is that we're sitting in really good shape. We've gotten some rains here. We've got tiles running. That's something we didn't have a whole lot as the year went on there in 2012. So I feel pretty good about the start that we've gotten so far. And I think the potential for yield here in central Illinois could be rather, rather robust.
Are you hearing is emergence doing okay in the drier areas of Iowa and on to the west?
No, some of my friends there in Iowa have said that the cool, dry conditions has meant that they didn't get real good germination everywhere, and so they've got uneven emergence. That's definitely a big concern. It's a very frustrating issue for them because, certainly they had drier soil conditions where it went in the ground beautifully, but whenever you're dry and you're cool, typically it's not going to be a good situation for you. And so I don't know how widespread it is just yet, but it's certainly got the attention of several folks in the trade.
Worse for soybeans than corn?
You know, I've been hearing that it's worse for soybeans than corn, but you know, especially in the state of Iowa, as you know, corn seems to be all they talk about. But they are planting a heck of a lot of soybeans this year, especially relatively speaking, because of the derecho event. But I've been hearing more of those stories in soybeans than corn, but guys are complaining maybe a little bit louder about the corn.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for having me, bud.
Yeah, that's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. USDA, by the way, will release its first soybean emergence numbers in the weekly crop progress report next week. And as a reminder, earlier this week on our programming, we heard from Emerson Nafziger that he would be more concerned about emergence for soybean and dry conditions rather than corn. Later on this afternoon, we'll record our Commodity Week program and post it to the website by about 6 o'clock this evening. For many of you, you can hear it over the weekend on these radio stations. If you listen to the home station, WILL AM 580, you'll hear it all tomorrow in the 2 o'clock hour. Our panelists for the week will include Joe Vaklavic of Standard Grain, Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, and Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. Again, we'll record that this afternoon, post it to the website this evening, and you can hear it on many of these stations starting tomorrow afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He's penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website this week taking a look at crop insurance. What in particular were you delving into this week, Gary?
We were looking at ECO use, and ECO use is the new crop insurance product that you can add on top of the combo product. So we were looking at the policy sold of ECO and then correlating it to coverage levels and several other things.
What did you find?
So if you look at RP policies, we calculate an average coverage level, which for a county. And to give you a feel, Champaign County has an average coverage level of 82%. That means that if we average all the coverage levels of RP policies in Champaign County, it averaged 82%. If you look at those coverage levels, average coverage levels, there's a bunch of counties with over 80%, and they all happen to be in the heart of the Corn Belt. Southern Minnesota, Iowa, North and Central Illinois, Northern and Central Indiana, going into Ohio. Then you had a bunch of counties with 70 to 80% coverage levels, and that's the rest of the Corn Belt and most of the other major production areas. There also happened to be some 70%, below 70% coverage level of counties, and those happen to be in high production risk areas, and think the Great Plains of Texas. So that's what we found. And then what we did is looked at the policies sold, and what you'll find is many more policies are sold in those high coverage level counties, so the center of the Corn Belt. So ECO in 2021 was sold on added to 2.5% of the RP policies. So it's not a large amount, but 2.5%. If you look at the heart of the Corn Belt or those counties with over 80%, it was 4.7%.
So even in the heart of the Corn Belt, not very many landowners or farm operators opted for the ECO?
No, it's not a large percent. 5% of the 5%, roughly 5% of the policies had ECO sold on it. What is sort of interesting is that if we look at those our ECO policies sold, most of them we're at the 95% level rather than the 90% level. 86% of the policies of ECO policies on RP policies were at the 95% coverage level, so the higher one.
Do we know approximately what size farms were more likely to have purchased ECO?
We don't know that yet, but and we won't know that until we begin looking at the acres reported by RMA, which won't happen until after July when farmers report their acres. But there's good reason to believe that larger farms are the ones that bought it. Again, larger farms tend to be more innovative, and they also have the ones where crop insurance agents spend their most time informing farmers about the policy.
They were using it as a risk management tool.
Yeah, larger farmers tend to be more innovative on crop insurance than smaller farms. I mean, and again, that makes sense. If you look at it, larger farmers tend to have more of their income associated with grain operations than smaller operations, which mostly have some other enterprise and maybe have much more off-farm employment associated with that.
We should probably define large farm here. Is it 1,500 and above?
Yeah, when we talk about those farms, we're talking about something actually probably even 1,200 and above versus below those levels.
Is there anything else?
Oh, just looking at ECO, and we didn't see large sales, but still significant sales in its first year.
Okay, hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. You can read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for taking the time with me today.
Yeah, great being here, Todd, as always.
Start in Brazil, South America. That second crop corn, Safrina, still in trouble, I take it.
Yeah, there's just not a whole lot changing with the weather forecast. And this is partially a function of the large upper level high that's in place across Brazil. And it's also a function of the dry season that begins in about a week or so. So essentially what we have is this large upper level high over Brazil. It's leaving a wide area dry. And this is not the situation that you need. It's been very dry leading into this week. Now we don't have very much rain, if any rain in the forecast over the next couple of weeks for most of the crop. And that's a big problem because about 2/3 to 3/4 of all of the corn in Brazil is from the second crop variety, which is now in the pollination and post-pollination phases. And there's just no rain out there. So we're going to have to see how things change. But there's just, again, not much to say about it because we have this big upper level high in place. We know that this is a function of the climate. And we know that at least for the northern half of corn, their climate receives no rain from the middle of May all the way through the middle of September. And I know that might be hard for people to wrap their heads around because usually when we're talking about Brazil, we're talking about soybeans, we're talking about all of the rain that they get. And that's true in December, January, and February, where a lot of these same regions average 10 to 12 inches of rain per month. Well, that same exact area where corn is now located averages no rain from about the middle of May through the middle of September. And unfortunately for them, the problem is that the dry season started a little bit early, but the corn crop was also planted late because of the dryness that we had back in October and into November that delayed soybean planting, which then, of course, delayed the second crop corn planting once we harvested soybeans. So a rather complex scenario, but the point is that there's just not much rain on the way.
Here in the United States, earlier in the week when USDA reported the weekly crop progress reports, I made note that the subsoil moisture levels in Iowa were considered 14% very short and 44% short across the whole of the state. It appears there could be a pretty good rainfall across the Corn Belt this weekend. Can you tell me about it, please?
Well, there's a system that's going to streak out of the northern plains and then move right across the Corn Belt this weekend. And so that will bring some decent rainfall to areas that needed in the spring wheat belt, especially in Montana, South Dakota, and parts of North Dakota. But we're only thinking about a third of that crop is going to receive beneficial rainfall just based on the expected track. Now, that same system is the one that you're talking about that will eventually move into the Corn Belt and bring some decent rains to parts of the region. Now, Iowa is a tricky situation because we can see that there will be some pretty good rains off to the west in Montana, and that's more a function of the topography of Montana as opposed to the actual way the system is going to develop. But once it reaches the Corn Belt, it will interact with some much muggier air and develop some heavy rainfall. Now, the best chance for heavy rainfall is to the south of Interstate 80 in parts of Missouri Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. Iowa's kind of on that transition zone where they're not quite in the ideal location for heavy rainfall, but you can't totally rule out the possibility. Just because if that system slows even a little bit, that would start to dump some pretty big totals there of maybe 0.5 to 1.5 inches. So at this point, Todd, I wouldn't plan on a big change in the situation in Iowa, but I would plan on a little bit of rain. I think the areas to the south of Interstate 80, a little bit further into the Corn Belt across where we are here in Illinois, have a better chance for some decent totals this weekend.
A lot of corn and soybeans are in the ground. Usually they need some heat to really get them to pop up and emerge properly. Will we have warm weather with this system or not?
Well, no. This system is moving along the southern edge of a very cool air mass. We'll see temperatures of around 5 to 10 degrees below normal every day for the next week. So this is not an ideal scenario for the warm weather that you're talking about that would aid germination and growth. We're going to have to wait a little bit for that because it does look a little warmer once we get around 7 to 10 days into the future, because we can see that the cool air mass is very likely to ease and that will allow some warmer weather to move in. But a lot of the times in this type of scenario, it takes that warmer weather a little longer than you would think to move in. So we're kind of thinking that most of it is going to hold off until next weekend and into the following week. So let's say 10 days out from now. That's when we'll start to get back into a more spring-like setup. So certainly not the ideal temperature setup that you would like for this time of the year, but that's just where we're at the moment. And again, it doesn't look like it's going to last beyond the next 7 to 10 days, but that's just pushing the weather forecast out a little too far.
Any reason to believe, because the system that's coming over the weekend spills out of the Canadian prairies across the northwest part of the Corn Belt and then into Missouri, Illinois, Ohio, that's the beginning of a more regular pattern for a while, or is it a one-off?
Well, that's a good question, but we would consider this more of a one-off, and the reason is that we're seeing the system move through because of the cool air mass that's in place, but it's fairly probable for the cool air mass to ease with time, and that will cause the storm track that exists now to shift around and then eventually dissipate. Now, that being said, there are additional systems coming up. Part of the reason that we think it's going to warm up in 7 to 10 days is because of a system that'll approach. And that system will eventually interact with some muggier air and should develop some rain. Now, we're going to need to see some of these eventually verify because, as you noted, parts of Iowa and Minnesota do need some rain, and that extends right into the Dakotas. That's where the rain chances aren't the best over the next 7 to 10 days. So that system might be a little bit important, but we would just caution that you can't get too excited about U.S. weather in May. What really drives corn and soybean development and even spring wheat development is what happens in June and July and then even into August for corn and soybean. So while this weather is important and is certainly not ideal for the moment, things can change a lot once we get a month or so out. So that's really when we'll start thinking hard about all these little details.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great being here.
That is Mike Tenere. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.